Record. Okay. Today is January 12th, 2004. This is our second class in the series of Women in Tanakh, our second class in the series, and our second class on Sharan. This evening, it is the 12th, isn't it? Already, my gosh. This evening we'll be discussing Sarah's relationship with her husband. Relationship with or relationship to? English teachers? What do you think?
With.
Relationship with her husband and her interactions with him. Actually wanted to start with the following. Like I said, I left the introductory material at home. Have any of you seen the New York Times from this morning?
No, I didn't.
Okay, the front page story of the New York Times this morning was on a wall that Israel is putting up practically overnight, right, it seems, through the middle of Jerusalem, or at least around Jerusalem, something like that. Okay. And the story that was headlining, the rest of the article was quite biased, but the picture was of a 90-year-old Arab lady saying, "My gosh, this is the second or third time I'm kicked out of my home that I have to move." So I open with the following question. What was the beginning? How did the Arab-Israeli conflict actually begin? What's the root of it all? Here she was moaning and complaining and crying, and her daughter is saying what a terrible thing it is. This 90-year-old woman has had to move two or three times because the Israelis are kicking her out and putting walls down the middle of her city. What do you think? What's the root of it all?
Sarah kicked out Hagar.
Okay.
Why?
Why is that the root? Why?
It was the first time it happened.
That what happened?
The root.
Okay.
That.
But Hagar wasn't Arab.
She wasn't Arab. Okay. So
that what? What about Abraham and Yishmael? Which one's Arab? Which one's Jewish?
Abraham is Jewish.
Okay.
Yishmael was the Arab's wife.
Okay. And.
Did they conflict?
So from all the way back till then, that's why they want to kill us, because all the way back, that's what I call bearing a grudge for quite a long time.
I'm pretty good at it.
It's a religious war.
A religious war. Okay. Okay. Any other ideas?
Why would they do that?
Why would they do that? Okay. So the topic of the class, and like I said before, the bracha has come through. I do not have enough copies this evening. So I'm going to ask you to please share. You're going to get... They're in three in one thing. So don't take one and pass it down. Just pass down the whole packet. And those of you who are sitting on the outlying areas, feel free to move in so you could share. The title of the class this evening is The Origins of the Arab-Israeli Conflict. Very timely title.
So Hagar was Egyptian, so she was there.
Well, the question is, even if Abraham was Jewish, but we discussed that last term, if Abraham was Jewish. By today's standards, I don't think Abraham would be considered Jewish, actually. What do we consider Jewish nowadays? I want to show you that it's not a controversial statement that I'm making. What do we consider Jewish nowadays? Either
Jewish mother or
conversion, accepting the all Malchut Shemayim, the all of the mitzvot, the all of the 613 mitzvot together. Could pass that down, please. Here's an extra one, too. Okay, whatever. All right, so I want to start, since I think we have a good number of people here this evening. I'd like you, together with the person sitting next to you, with a study partner, to look at the two sources that I gave you. One is a Hebrew and the other is an English. Use whichever you're comfortable with. The English, as I mentioned earlier tonight, is not an article translation. It's a translation from it's called the New JPS translation, called Tanakh, T-A-N-A-K-H. I highly, highly recommend it as the most objective translation that's available. If you can say objective and translation in the same sentence. But please help yourselves. Read the Hebrew, look at the English, or the other way around. And I left a few lines on the bottom for questions. That's the most important part.
What's your name?
K-A-K-H. T-A-N-A-K-H. It's put out by the Jewish Publication Society. Okay, let's get some of those questions down. Who wants to start?
Well, my question would be, why did she blame him?
Why did who blame whom?
Why did Sarah blame Avram.
For?
Because she said that.
For what is your second question? The second half of your question, what is she blaming him for? The wrong done to me is your fault. Number one, what's his fault? And number two, what's the wrong?
It's her fault. She was the one who gave Hagar to him.
So you're assuming then that the wrong that's being done to her is what?
He's the one who was in the wrong for giving Hagar to him.
So what is she? What's the wrong that she's complaining about?
Why should she blame him?
For what?
Getting her pregnant.
For getting who pregnant? So you're saying that the wrong that she's talking about is that it's not fair that Hagar has a baby and it's your fault that Hagar has a baby.
That's right.
Okay.
She was responsible for Hagar becoming pregnant.
Okay.
Not quite.
More or less.
He could have said no.
That's right.
He could have said no.
I say, you know, when
men never say no.
Huh? Men never say no. Not to an offer.
Okay, Rocky, what were you going to say?
What I was going to say is that lots of times we say things to our spouses or people in our family or just even people. You know, we make them an offer, but is it a real offer? It's kind of an offer that you just want to challenge them. You just want to hear, like, probably the opposite. No, I'm still happy. I don't need it. I only love you. So the question is, why did he listen to her?
So then you're saying that he is at fault, that her blaming him is correct.
Maybe
it is his fault that you shouldn't have really taken me up on the offer.
Exactly.
Excellent. Good. Yeah.
But why is he blaming her, though?
Why?
She is blaming him that it's his fault he said yes.
Yes.
She's blaming him.
That it's his fault because he should have said no thank you.
He should have realized that it was just an offer to, like, be slightly magnanimous, but she really wanted to hear, I don't need to do that.
Make sure you come back to our Rachel class when we talk about Rachel and Yaakov, the second Rachel class, okay? I don't know how many classes from now. But you come back for that class, yeah.
Because, first of all, Hashem told him to listen to Sarah.
Okay.
That's where it comes from.
And so he's not at fault, really.
He's really not, because, first of all, he knows that Hashem told him, listen to what your wife is saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that perspective, he did. Maybe over here she is upset and she's blaming him because the way the concubine has treated her.
Uh-huh.
So now this
is a different wrong. Not that Hagar is pregnant, but now it's the way Hagar is treating her. And it's interesting you call her a concubine because the Torah doesn't call her a concubine. What do we have it in English?
The English.
Oh, it's not saying it's a concubine. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Look in the Hebrew. Here we go. Translation is always interpretation. Look in the Hebrew. This one I think almost everyone here should probably get. Vatichain, I'm at the end of Pasuk Gimel. Vatichain, Ota Lavam Isha, with a dot in the hay. She gave her to Avram, her man, Lo Le'isha, as a wife. The Hebrew word for concubine is Pilegesh. That's not the word that the Torah uses here. The Torah uses the word Isha. That Hagar was supposed to have the same marital status as Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
So now, for sure she's angry that Hagar, who's the maid, has the same status as her, even though Sarah did it. And secondly, that she's treating her very inappropriately because it said she saw that she conceived her mistress was lowered in her esteem.
Mm-hmm.
That Hagar viewed Sarah as less. Now, let's go with that for a moment. Why do you think Hagar would view Sarah as less?
Because she has a baby.
Exactly. Look for a moment before we continue with our questions. I just want to skip forward to source number 5 on page 2. Rashi asked the very question. What was it about Hagar, what happened to Hagar that made Hagar feel she was better than Sarah? It says as follows, that when the Torah says that Avram and Sarah came together, he came to Bayavo Hagar Vatahar Mibi'ah Rishona, the first time. And here they were married for at least 10 years. It seems that they were from the Mefarshim, that they were in Eretz Israel for 10 years, but they were married for many years before then. That's a caregiver tabe. Now, what does Rashi, how does Rashi explain? She said, Hagar said, Sarai zo, in sitra kigluya. Her inside, this Sarai lady, her insides are not like her outsides. Mar'a atzma kilu hitzadeke. She makes herself look like here she's this saint. We spoke last week that she's not just a beautiful person physically, but she's a complete spiritual being. And here she puts herself off as being this, you know, Mother Teresa kind of figure. They ain't not tzaddiket, but she's clearly not. If she was such a tzaddiket, if she was such a righteous woman, then she would have become pregnant as immediately as I did. So it must be God's giving me a message that I am greater than her. So now imagine Sarah in this situation, the pain that's involved in her not being able to have this child. Now she's giving Hagar. The first part of the pain of giving Hagar is that they're equal. The second is that Hagar, not just she gets pregnant immediately and then throws it in her face. Not just, I'm pregnant, but I'm pregnant and you're not. Mm. I got pregnant fast and you couldn't because I must be better than you. Very hurtful and very painful. And that's why she turns on Avram, possibly. And not necessarily the unfairness of the situation only, but she's like, why is Hagar throwing this in my face? Any sensitive person, any normal human being would maybe not hide the pregnancy, but at least not flaunt it like that. So she's mad at Hagar, is another possibility. What other questions do we have?
Why not turn to Hashem?
Uh-huh. Who does she turn to instead?
Uh-huh.
Excellent question. More.
At the end it says, Avram tells her to deal with her as you think is right. And you have this image of Sarai as a righteous woman, and here it says she basically chased her away. Or she treated her so harshly that she ran away. So it seems inconsistent.
Yes.
But did Hashem tell Avram to listen to his wife,
to marry her? But now Avram's telling Sarah, do with her whatever you need, because Sarah's complaining to him. So Avram says to her, do with her whatever you want.
But Hashem told him to
marry her, to listen to her to start with, not to tell him to tell Sarah to mistreat her. But she says,
but didn't he tell her to send her away?
That's later on. That's in Parashat Aleph. That's not at this point. It's a totally different story because Yishmael is involved there, and Yishmael is not involved in this story here. Although we're going to look at it in a little bit, possibly at the end of this class. Okay. The first thing that I really want to address this evening, and it's a question maybe because I didn't give you enough time to ask questions, but nobody really has presented it at this point. What was Sarah hoping to accomplish by this?
She wanted the child for herself.
Huh, where do you get that from?
It says here.
Consort with my maid.
You will have a maid, and perhaps I shall have a son through her.
Good. Look in the Hebrew for a minute, in Pasuk Dad. Vatamar Sarai El Avram, says in Kinina, Sarani Hashem Ledek, that has stopped me from giving birth. Come to my maid servant, Ulai Ibanemi Mena. And it's a very unusual form of the word ibaneh, which I will be built or I will have a ben ibaneh from her, that I will have a child through her. What is she envisioned her relationship is going to be with this child?
It's going to be her own child. Yeah,
that she's going to raise the child. Why does she assume that will be her relationship with this child?
Because Hagar is her maidservant.
Exactly.
And she didn't view him as Avram's second wife.
Right.
But this is her servant whose job it is now to produce a son that she will have.
That she's going to take care of. So now let's look on the next page. That's definitely an opinion that we're presenting. So we present this idea that she will herself be raising this child. Rashi looks at it in a totally different point of view. Think of what I presented to you before about Hagar's view on what makes a woman pregnant. What did Hagar say about what makes a woman pregnant or not?
Righteousness.
Her righteousness. So now, based on that information, those of you who didn't cheat, what is Sarah hoping to accomplish by giving Hagar as a wife to Avram?
To be righteous.
That in the zchut, that that is a righteous act, and that's what he says. That's what Rashi says, source number two. Because I'm being such a great person by doing this really selfless act of bringing a second wife into my house with the possibility of her having a child, because of this act, I will then be able to have a child. So did she intend, according to Rashi, did she ever intend necessarily for Hagar to have a child?
No.
Not really. She hoped that she herself, because remember, we're living in a time where God has a close relationship with his creations, and where anything that the creations do, the correlation seems very straight. I do good, I get good. I do bad, I don't get good. Yes.
You see, maybe Sarah want to find out if Abraham can have a baby or
Excellent.
Not.
Excellent.
This is her big question, because if she can be pregnant, maybe it's his fault.
It's his fault.
Well, I don't she think is a Hagar to see if he can have a baby. And what she did is say,
Excellent point. I want to inform you, though, of a piece of information that happened in the chapter immediately preceding this. Those of you who have Kumashim, if you don't, you can pass me out. We'll see what
I don't think
now.
In those days they knew about.
You would be quite surprised what they knew about in those days.
Well, I don't think they had all the information we have today.
I would be very surprised. You'll see when we get to Leah as a mother, actually, that I would even disagree with you. Okay, we're looking at the chapter immediately preceding this one, which is chapter 15. Chapter 15. We have the famous covenant of the parts between God and Abraham, that he tells Abraham, cut these animals in half, walk between them, and I'm telling you something very important. Here we go. Okay. Start from the very beginning. And I'm freely translating because I don't have the English. After these things, God spoke to Abraham in a vision. What page are we on? 67. 65. Do I have 69? 67. Okay?
67.
67. Okay. Since we're talking about the Arab-Israeli conflict, I guess that's an appropriate number. Okay. So God speaks to Abraham and says, Abraham, don't be afraid. I'm going to protect you. You will have many rewards. Abraham says, God, what are you going to give me? What could you possibly give me? V'anochi holech ariri, he says, I am barren. Uved mesek v'itihu damesek Eliezer, the only person that I have around is my manservant. And Abraham says, you didn't give me any kids, and my manservant is going to inherit after me. And in Pasuk Dalet, Hashem says to him, this guy will not inherit. You will have another child. Now, imagine that Abraham comes back, and like many husbands, tells his wife what happened. I had this encounter with God. He talked to me again. And he told me this time, again, that I'm going to be a great nation. Because remember, he told him all the way at the beginning of Parsha Lech Lecha that he's going to make him a great nation. And I said to God, but God, I am barren. How could that possibly be? It must be that the great nation is going to come from my manservants. And God says, no, it won't come from him. It will come from you. And Avram now comes back. Now let's look at context. Avram comes back and tells this to Sarah. And what's Sarah's reaction? If God is telling you that you are going to be the father of a great nation, it must be that maybe I won't be the mother of this great nation. And the most important thing here is to make the nevuah come true. We want the prophecy to actually happen. So I am willing to give of myself to actually give you Hagar so that hopefully I will become the mother of this nation. But if not, at least you'll have a son. A lot of stuff going on here. Like, real heavy baggage. Okay, fine. Where did she get this idea from to give Hagar? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't really think, here, take my cleaning lady. You know, it's not really like something that you normally think
because
of doing.
She doesn't have no choice.
She has no choice. Well, she could say go out and find the wife, go back to the shadchan, let's bring someone else in. But why would she think, I don't know, anyway,
maybe she
to give another one, let's go for fertility treatments or something.
Sort of a higher class.
Hagar.
Those state they have facility.
Higher class than what?
That I didn't.
Okay, the Mepharshim actually tells that she was Paro's daughter. And right. When Paro saw the amazing things that happened to Avram, he said, it's better my daughter be a maid in this house than a princess in my house. So he sends her up there. Yeah.
That's what I want.
That's what you want to say. Okay, look at source number 4. I'm presenting to you a somewhat different approach than I promise you probably you've ever heard before. Source number 4 is an old Assyrian marriage contract from the 19th century BCE. Assyrian is like pretty close in this area where Abram lived, northeast of Israel. Lakipum has married Hatala, daughter of Enishru. In the country of central Anatolia, Lakipum may not marry another woman, but in the city of Ashur, he may marry a Hyrodoel. A Hyrodoel, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it properly, the actual definition of it is a temple slave, but it's a woman who served in this temple to their gods, you know, this pagan temple, and she was viewed as a goddess, as sort of a half goddess. So she wasn't, and the union actually between a man and the Hyrodoel was viewed as a very high level kind of thing because it was uniting man and God together in one kind of big thing. Great. Okay. If within years Hatala does not provide him with offspring, she herself will purchase a slave woman, and later on, after she will have produced a child by him, he may then dispose of her by sale wheresoever he pleases. And then who would be raising the child? The wife. Should Lakipum choose to divorce her, he must pay her 5 minas of silver, and should Hatala choose to divorce him, she must pay him 5 minas of silver. Witnesses Masha, Ashur Vishtakal, Talia, Shupina, whatever, you can pronounce it yourself. Okay, it seems that this was actually practiced, that it was a normal, natural thing to put into, just like we put into our marriage contracts nowadays, if I don't provide for you in the way to which you will be you are accustomed, then I will pay you XYZ. You know, in other words, I promise to do this and this. In the marriage contract, we said if she doesn't produce a child for him, she can take a slave woman. She may. Not she has to, but she is permitted to take a slave woman and give the slave woman to her husband as a surrogate mother to a child that the wife will then raise. So I present to you that possibly Sarah suggested this because she knew that it was a done thing, that it was a thing that people
common
did.
Common practice.
Yes, common practice. Okay.
It's like this, Senator Thurmond.
Storm Thurmond?
Or wait, the president, right? Who had the
Jefferson slave?
Jefferson.
There you go. Yeah. Right. A little.
I mean,
right.
It's not far-fetched.
It's not, right. It's not a. It's not totally far-fetched. My doc, I brought you in source number 3. We're not going to go into it now, but he basically says the surrogate mother, that she's going to have the child, that Hagar will have the child and Sarah will raise him. And we'll, this topic will come up again with Rachel and Leah, with Bilhah and Zilpah, with them naming the other children and what the relationship was, and so on and so forth. Okay.
So it's not far-fetched that she should think that this child is essentially hers.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Based on this.
Correct.
Okay.
And that she has rights to that child, which means she also has a right to decide how to raise that child. And if that child is not being raised according to her desires, she could theoretically, as she does later on, throw him out.
Okay, which
she actually does.
Mm-hmm. We can understand.
Yes, which we can understand a little bit now. But there's still a few, yes, please.
So why wouldn't she keep the child?
Yes, and throw out Hagar.
And Hagar would be, yes.
That's an excellent question. I don't know the answer to it, but I would like to suggest possibly, and if anybody else, please chime in if you have something else you want to suggest. There's a lot of emotional stuff going on between Sarah and Hagar. You know, Hagar is a princess, but she's functioning as Sarah's shivcha, as her maidservant. So there's, and then here, when she becomes pregnant, she sort of wants it in front of Sarah and tries to put on airs of superiority. And I think there may have been, it's not so easy for Sarah to get rid of Hagar. You know, plus Sarah herself is a somewhat sensitive woman, and she could think that, you know, how could I separate a mother, an actual biological mother, from her child? And also, who's going to do the work for her? She's in the middle of the desert. Where's she going to find another maidservant? So all these things, yeah.
And Hagar could love the child, too.
Possibly. Okay. So now, our question was, what is she blaming him for? So we had already what she's trying to accomplish. Either that Hagar will have the child and Sarah will raise it, or that Sarah will herself will give birth to a child as a result of the self-sacrifice of bringing a second wife into the house. Okay. What is she accusing him of? Source number 6. Rashi tells us as follows. Hamasi alecha, he says, Hamas asoili, the wrong that has been done to me, alecha ani matilaha onesh. I put the punishments on you. Kesehit palalto alak gadosh baruch hu, when you prayed to God, and you said, Mati tein li the anokhi halecha riri, which we read not 5 minutes ago, what will you give me? I am barren. Lo hi palalto el alecha, you only prayed for yourself. You should have prayed for both of us. If you would have included me in your tefillot, then when God said you will have a child, he would have said you and Sarah will have children. So that's what she says. Therefore, what's the wrong that she's talking about?
But he did pray for her.
He didn't pray for her. What does he say to God? Rashi points on the fact that he says, he focuses on the fact that he says, I am barren, not we are barren. And there's a famous story of Rav Aryeh Levine, who was a tzaddik of Yerushalayim, who went to the doctor with his wife. And he said, Doctor, my wife's foot is hurting us. That's not what Abraham is saying to Hashem. Abraham, according to Sarah's interpretation here, she says, you only prayed for yourself. God, I am barren. What's going to happen? Not we are barren. And God said, don't worry, I'll take care of you. Not you, plural. So what's the wrong now that she's accusing him of? What wrong?
She doesn't give him the benefit of the doubt to say maybe he is the one who's at fault.
Because he is the tzaddik. He is, he's barren and she's barren. He's praying for himself. Why can't he pray for her to also have children?
Well, they're in the middle of the desert and there's nobody else around.
But he should be praying for both of them. No, but he says me. He says it in the singular. I, not we.
But maybe he feels responsible that he's got a low sperm count or something.
I don't know how, if they were that, knowledgeable about what was going on here. But I think that he
just
possibly...
assumed. Maybe in his prayer he assumed.
But then why did he use the singular? Remember, Sarah's a female. So she's going to take a female bent on this. You said nitty-gritty nitpicky, you know? And I think here even that she really has something to stand on, I think, when she's saying to him, so the wrong that she's talking about, Hamasi Alacha, the wrong is her barrenness, not the whole situation with Hagar. She says, the whole reason we're in this mess is because you didn't daven for me. If you would have daven for me, God would have answered you like that. And I would have become pregnant also.
And to her, obviously, God answered him. Because
right, but he has a child.
Right.
Very, very clear. Yes. And what's the second interpretation, which was already presented in this class this evening? You're stealing. The word chamas can also be used in reference to stealing, as if you remember, possibly the actual decree of the destruction of the world by the flood was made because the land was filled with chamas. Chamas is interpreted as stealing. So she says, you're stealing your words from me. You're keeping your words from me. You listen to Hagar and you say nothing. You keep quiet. You should tell her. Don't treat her that way. You should rebuke her. And we have a more colorful explanation of this on the next page. So far, according to Rashi, she is justified in blaming him because he is liable, guilty. He is guilty. He is guilty, number one, of not praying for her. He's guilty, number two, it seems from the text, of not rebuking Hagar. All he does is say, Sarah, do whatever you want to do. This is your thing. This is a virus of Zach. I don't want to involve myself in this. So Radak tells us on number 7, I'm sorry, I only have the Hebrew here. Hamash ani lokachat mishivchati. The evil, the bad, the wrongdoing that I'm getting from my maidservant, alakahu, it's your fault. Ki ani l'toratcha nitkavanti. I, my goal was your good. I intended for your good, shenetati alecha, when I gave her to you, kadeshi alecha zera mimena, so you would have a child from her. Now my esteem is lowered in her eyes, and you're not saying anything, and you're not rebuking her, and you're not punishing her. And in your honor, because you're not doing anything, I can't do anything either, because it's going to look like I'm stepping on your toes. So I can't do anything. So then she says, let Hashem, Yishvot Hashem ben Yir Benacha, Hashem should just take care of everything that's going on here. And he goes on to explain. Wait a minute. Okay, now this is great. Okay. The three lines from the bottom. Ki ava mafil haya yodea zeh. He knew. Sorry. Zeh amru b'dvarim she'in l'kroch hamasalim kugon zeh. Ki ava mafil haya yodea zeh be'emet haya mishra b'lo kibla. Had Abraham known what was going on, known what Hagar was saying to Sarah, for sure he would have given her Musar. For sure he would have rebuked her. For sure he would have told her that what she's doing is inappropriate. Ki rachoku, this is great. Ki rachoku sheyishok Abraham makalon tarisho. Abraham would never keep silent in the embarrassment and defacement of his wife. Kol shekein mishivchata, especially if it's coming from her maidservant. Yachal pishan esheil lolisha, even if she is married to him as a wife. So according to, this is very interesting, because Radak is reading Rashi and interpreting it, and saying, Sarah, your argument against Abraham was that Abraham was keeping quiet on your behalf. Only reason he was keeping quiet on your behalf, Sarah, was why?
Because he didn't tell him that.
He didn't know. If he knew, he would have defended your honor, he would have thrown down the gauntlet, he would have taken care of you, he would have been your knight in shining armor, coming to rescue you from the embarrassment of your maidservant throwing her pregnancy in your face. Of course, Abraham didn't know. So here's how we're going. We started last week, and I did this on purpose. We put the Avot and Imahot way up here. They are incredible people, spiritually perfect and almost unattainable. Now this week, we're knocking them down a notch a little bit, saying that the Avot were real people. But Radak is saying, let's put them back up there, because Abraham for sure didn't know what was going on. But then this brings us to our other question. He is being Damakashakut, because after all, he's Avraham Avinu. He's one of the Avot. He's one of our forefathers. He's our model that we all model our behavior after. But we're still left with this big question. Was Sarah, was Sarah's behavior justifiable as an aim? Because she was an aim. And she still has her standard of behavior has to be way up here. But it seems from the Pesukim that her standards were somewhat less than perfect. Mm.
Yes.
And the Talmud uses two words to describe, actually one verb to describe Sarah's actions against Hagar, Bata'aneha. She afflicted her. She wasn't nice to her. But what did she do? As she says, she gave her hard work.
Was he nice to her?
The same language.
What? The same language of the work that we had in Mitzrayim, that we have the lechem oni, that we eat from the matzah on Pesach, the bread of the affliction, as hard work as work was in Mitzrayim. And the Midrash explains to us, I gave you an excerpt here, what the Midrash explains to us is that when she gave her buckets to bring water up from the well for the bathtub, she gave her buckets with holes in it.
Wow.
Does this sound like the behavior of Sarah? Like, this is Sarah Imenu. This isn't just some hormonally controlled woman. She's Sarah.
Yeah.
They should rise above the hormones.
Yeah.
But she was...
You know, what's going on?
No, it's just a little far.
Because it makes her above people, like, not above a real person with traits and foibles and all the things that make a person human.
And therefore...
She could be generous.
What does that do for us?
It helps us identify with somebody like that. When you have feelings, then you're not supposed to have these feelings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But she has them.
Mm-hmm. Right. But at the same time, just because she's an aim doesn't necessarily mean that she can get away with acting the way she does. And Ramban says a very important, crucial line in source number 9. And I brought it in Hebrew and I brought it in English. It's there. Chat'ah inenu b'inoy hazah. Do you know how difficult it is for him to say this? He comes straight out. Our mother, Sarah, sinned. chat'ah. She did something wrong with afflicting Hagar. And because of this, the gam Avraham behanichol la'sorkei, not only did Sarah sin, who else is involved? You can't stand idly by Avraham and think that you'll be, you know, your slate will be wiped clean. The Shama Hashem Elonya, who did God listen to? Hagar's crying out. Then Atan Labain, what kind of child did he give her? Sheyehe Pera Adam, that he'll be a wild person. La'anot Zera Avraham v'Sara v'chol minei ha'inoy. As much as Sarah afflicted Hagar, Hagar's offspring will continue to afflict Sarah's offspring even more and more and more.
Yeah, but Sarah could be jealous about the whole thing.
She could be. But she's an aim, and she's supposed to rise above it, and she is not supposed to treat another human being, no matter how nasty and horrible that other human being is doing.
I know, but she
is not supposed to treat her that way. And because of that, and this is Ramban's big thing, everything we do, this is the other thing we learned from them, everything we do has repercussions. Mm-hmm. And this, what she did, had repercussions for years and years and years, said Ramban.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could look at this and say, wait a minute, she's being human. Like we just said, she's being human. Of course she's going to be not nice to Hagar.
She could be really jealous.
Right.
That's why we're building a fence.
That's why we're building a fence.
I would be jealous.
That's it. Right. But it's a very strong thing that he's saying here.
The thing that we're losing, you know, is that doesn't give an excuse for a person.
I know, it doesn't give
so out of control.
Exactly.
It's the emotion, you know.
But it makes us understand it better, too.
It makes us relate to her. Not that, okay, I can behave that way also, but she did, it's normal, now let's rectify the situation. Let's make sure that I don't get there, but I know that she did it also, because, you know, otherwise the guilt can be totally paralyzing.
Yeah.
But I heard another interpretation of this, why Yishmael turned out to be such a wild boy. Just about a year ago, there's a speaker in town whose name is Rivi Pupko Klitanek. She was here for the Jewish Federation's Women's annual Women's Day of Learning. It was the second annual Women's Day of Learning. And the day after the Women's Day of Learning, she came and gave a class to some of the girls at Akiva. And we had been learning Sefer Bereishit. Actually, no, she came at the end of the year. She came back in May when she came for the Melton graduation. That's what it was. And she came for the Melton graduation at the end of the year. And we had finished up the book of Bereishit in my class in Akiva. And she came and gave a talk to the girls, and she said something very, very interesting. And I don't remember if she quoted it from someone, but I'm saying it in her name. So here goes. She said as follows. Why was Yishmael such a wild child? And what was wrong, what Sarah did? What was wrong was that Sarah thought that out of a loveless union, that the child would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Would be a good child. She's forcing the union on Avram almost. Maybe. At least presenting him with this option. And he could be thinking to himself, okay, well, God said I'm going to have a child. This must be it. This must be the sign. And if you remember, we spoke last week that Sarah was the highest of all the Nevi'ot, that she was the prophetess of the highest degree possible. So when Hashem says, you know, listen to her, it could be that what Sarah is saying here is with Ruach HaKodesh, is with divine providence, and he's thinking that maybe that's it. So she says that when she put Hagar together with Abraham, it was a union that was devoid of love. And because there was a union devoid of love, the child had very little fighting chance. Now, in that case, however, with a proper upbringing, naturally, the child will come out well, right? But what happened? Why doesn't he get the proper upbringing? Let's look again in your book.
It's torn between the
chapter 20. Where are we? 21.
Yeah. No father figure. It's torn between.
But before that, when he had the father figure. Chapter 21. What page are we on? 95.
He could be torn between the two women.
God remembers Sarah. He did for Sarah what he said he would do. She became pregnant. She gave Abraham a ben in his old age, a son in his own age at the time that God said she would. And Abraham called his son that she gave that Sarah gave birth, and you see the focus in these three Psukim, how often the relationship is referred to?
Mm.
Sarah had the child. This is Sarah's child. Don't forget, this kid belongs to Sarah. With whom? With Abraham. This is what was intended all along. Abraham gave him a Brit Milah at the age of 8 days, like God told him to. Abraham was 100 years old when Yitzchak was born. And he said, and Sarah said, oh, this is, God made this big joke on me. Everybody who hears is going to laugh at me. And then they named him, Yitzchak, whatever. His name is already Yitzchak, whatever. So he grows up and he's weaned, and Abraham makes this huge big party. And Sarah sees, here's verse 9, Pasuk 10. Who is this child supposed to be? Who was Ishmael supposed to be? Who's Ben? The Ben of Sarah. And who is he referred to very clearly here? Ben Hagar HaMitzrit. Her background even is referred to here. Remember, this is not Sarah's child. Now, first of all, you could say it's in contrast to Yitzchak. But here, how long has Ishmael been in her house for?
13 years.
At least. At least 13 years. Right, about 13 years. No, and she says to Abraham, Garesh ha'ama hazod v'yatana, chase out this woman and her child. Ki lo yirash ben ha'ama hazod im b'ni im Yitzchak. Because this child will not inherit together with Yitzchak. This child has different values than Yitzchak. I have tried, she says. But this is my own interpretation. I have tried for 13 years to correct this child. I was there with him for the formative years. I raised him. I can't. It's not working. Why, says Rabbi Klitanes? Because there was no love between Abraham and Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the child is going to be that much more difficult to raise. Therefore, the only possible option at this point was kicking out. But now, once he's kicked out, what is his feeling going to be towards his father? Nothing but hatred.
Mm.
How could you do this? Everyone else has a father. You're supposed to love me no matter what, and all that other stuff. Now, why did Avram kick him out? Because he listened to Sarah, because Sarah said, you know, I tried. I put my all into it, and I did everything that I could, and I can't. Why? Because bottom line, he's Ben Hagar HaMitzrit. And I can't do anything with him about it.
But he didn't want to, right? In the beginning, when she told him to go for it, you know.
Of course, he doesn't want to. It's his child.
Right. How can I do that? And then he went back to Hashem.
And God said, "Listen
to what your wife Sarah said."
Right. And one interpretation of it is because remember Sarah has Ruach HaKodesh. And another interpretation of it, according to where we're going now, is you listened to her once before. And look where it got you. So now you have no choice but to listen to her. Because you listened to her the first time, that's what got you into this whole mess. And now you have to listen to her.
But you see, since it says that, you know, you have to listen to what your wife is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays people are doing it because they said that since Abraham listened to what my wife said, then nowadays men also listen to what their wives say because they learn it from the Torah. But they don't look at it that way that, oh, look what his wife brought him to. That's the first part, right. You know? So they don't look at it that way.
Because there's millions and millions of ways that we could look at the Torah. You know, in every way. This is just one path of looking at it. You know, the part, this is I can come in from a totally different direction and say this is talking about the beautiful relationship between a husband and wife, that look, he listened to Sarah even though it wasn't what he wanted to do and it really went again. You know, I could take a totally different approach. But this is just one approach to it. And in each approach, you can learn something different. And that's the beauty of it because they don't each necessarily negate the other. It's just a different approach and a different way of looking at it. We say, Shivim Panim LaTorah, that there are an infinite number of ways that we can look at the Torah and learn something new each time. I want to finish up just by looking at source number 10. Radak sums up the whole thing for us according to his opinion. Remember, he was the one who said that the wrong that Sarah felt was the way Hagar was treating her and that Avram was being quiet about it. And that Radak said, of course, Avram was only quiet about it because he didn't know. So here we go. Af Alpi, which, okay. When he says to her, he's focusing on the words in verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Avram al Sarai, Avram says to Sarai, Hinei shivchatech biyadech, your maid is in your hands, asila hatov be'enayach, do with her whatever you think. So he says as follows, ויאמר שפחתך בידך, אף על פי ששכבה בחיקי, even though she stayed in my bosom, שפחתך היא כבתחילה. It's your shipcha, she's your maidservant. V'yesh lach v'shut alah, you have authority over her, they're dotah. Im ta'asheh lach ha'davar shalo kehogan, if she does something inappropriate, you have the authority to knock her down a notch. Ki shifchatechi irishutah b'yadeh, because she's your maidservant and her authority is in your hand. V'lo t'kabel mimeni k'moshe t'kabel mimech. She won't accept rebuke from me the way she'll accept it from you, because you're her boss. And I allow you, don't worry, I don't feel that you're stepping on my toes. I'm allowing you to rebuke her because she'll listen to you better. And what does Sarah do? She did too much, Sarah did too much to Hagar, and she made her work very hard. And it's possible, even, he says, he entertained. That it could be she beat her, and she swore at her. And Hagar couldn't take it anymore. She couldn't tolerate it. And she ran from Sarai. Sarai here did not behave the way a person, an ethical, righteous person behaves. Lo musar, not ethical. Ki afal pisha Avraham machala et kavodo. Because even though Avram said, don't worry, I am mochel my kavod, he passed over his own honor and he said, it's okay, you can do it. I don't feel like you're stepping on my toes. And he said to her, do it, ashe la hatov beinayach, do to her whatever you think is good. Hayara oila lim shochet yadal kavodo velo lanot hashi. Should have still, anyway, even though he said, I am passing over my honor and it's okay, she should have still honored him. And honored his honor, and not done anything about it. And it's also not midat chasidut. It's also not a way of chesed, the nefesh tova, and a good attitude. Ki ein ra'oi la'adam la'asov kol yachol tov b'mashat ha'chayado. A person should never take his authority to the fullest extent to which he's allowed to take it. Just because I can doesn't mean I should. That's what he says. Yes, you have the authority to beat her, you have the authority to swear at her, you have the authority to do whatever you want to get her in line. It doesn't mean that you should do it. So Amar HaChacham, he quotes this Chacham who says, Umana'a mechila be'etai cholet, how nice it is that you pass over the ability to do something at the time when you really, the opportunity presents itself. V'zesh asta sarai lo hayatov be'nehakeol. He doesn't say chata'a, he doesn't say she sinned, but this what she did, wasn't good in God's eyes. He didn't like it so much. Like the angel says later in Hagar, just in the next section, God heard your suffering. And the malach, the angel, and that God through the angel gave her the bracha in place of her suffering. But Avram didn't hold Sarai back from afflicting her. Even though it was evil in his eyes, mipnei shalom bayit. Marital harmony. So now you have this, okay, fine. Sarah's really, really, really bad, right? She's Hagar's doing these horrible things to her. Sarah says to Avram, you should rebuke her. Avram says, I didn't know, honey dear, but you know, you do whatever you need to do. You have authority over her. I don't feel like you're stepping on my toes. You could do it in my name, whatever, but she'll listen to you more than me. So she goes, and she follows her authority to the nth degree, and so much that Hagar runs away. And Sarah was wrong in exerting her total authority, number one. Number two, because she shouldn't have done that. Number two, she should have also, like, just because Avram said, I'm passing over my kavod, doesn't mean that she should have passed over his kavod. And Avram didn't stop her, even though he knew what she was doing was wrong. Because, you know, husbands and wives shouldn't fight. Mm-hmm. So he shouldn't stop her. Okay. Yeah, so he's Christine, and she's clearly not. What?
She asked him to get involved.
She did ask him to get involved, and he says, no, honey, yes. Here he's saying she really didn't mean it, maybe. She wants the carte blanche from him. Tell me I could do whatever I want, and he gives it to her.
But he knew how angry she was at Hagar for, and you know, being treated badly by her and everything. He should have intervened then.
So So he's saying he didn't.
But
Hashem
told
her. He didn't because of Shalom Bayit.
He listened to her the first time.
Yeah. Hashem told her what?
To listen to her.
Hashem didn't tell him to listen to her until they were chasing out Yishmael. That's much later on. At this point, he doesn't say anything. God doesn't intervene at all. So now the question that we have, and that we've come back to it a number of times, what is this whole story written for? This whole story is here, that you should learn from the good, to do the good, and not to do the bad. So what's my point? Why did I call this the origins of the Arab-Israeli conflict? Because I think that the strongest message that's here, beyond that Sarah is human, beyond that all the emotional baggage that's going on here, I think that the bottom line is that we sometimes let our emotions get the best of us, mm-hmm. and we cannot imagine the repercussions of what we do. And I just want to share with you for a moment, I just saw a movie called Bruce Almighty. And do you see Bruce Almighty? About this guy, Bruce, who gets the godlike qualities. So he sits down at his computer, that's his way, he's going to file all the prayers away, and all these prayers come in, and it's too many prayers for him to handle, so he says answer yes for all of them. Okay? And he, no, that wasn't the part I was talking about, although that was interesting too. Like, one night, that's what it was, one night he and his girlfriend are out on the porch, and he wants to make a beautiful night for her, so he brings the moon closer to Earth. And they have this beautiful romantic night together. And then the next day, you see the girlfriend sitting at the table watching the news. What happened? Thousands and thousands and thousands of people died in a flood in India or something because of a huge tidal wave. That why? Because of unusual celestial activities. Because he moved the moon closer now. Did he realize that his actions would have huge repercussions? Clearly not. But every little thing that we do has repercussions for many, many, many years to come. So think before you act, and have a wonderful week.
You too.